The following program may contain subject matter and language not suitable for all ages. If you are sensitive to true crime details or adult language, perhaps you might want to check out some of our other shows on the network, which are safe for all ages. So with viewer and listener discretion advised, let's get to the show.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Murder, Mysteries, and More. My name is Nicole Mancha, and I am joined by my lovely co-host, Alex Mercado.
Howdy, howdy.
And we are joined by our other lovely co-host and wonderful producer, Mike Mercado.
She's back, everybody. Look who's back.
That's how you do an intro, Mike.
Well, you didn't like my sensual, very energetic,
you know, when you called
one.
Me lovely, it got a little uncomfortable.
Well, I'm a little uncomfortable that you found it uncomfortable. Yeah. And we are talking about a very uncomfortable situation today, guys, because on today's episode of Murder, Mysteries, and More, your introduction podcast to the world of true crime, the strange, and horrors of the world, it is a subject that is interested me for such a long time. It has been in pop culture for such a long time. Today, we are talking about Roanoke. Do any of you guys know anything about the case of Roanoke?
I actually do. I've seen a few docs about it, and I did catch up on the American Horror Story season for a little pop culture reference. You know how I feel about these very old pilgrim type stories? I think it's a lot of nonsense. It's fun to see where it comes from. It's fun to see what made the outright panic create the story, but I'm very much the one of, back to your old, you know, old saying was, there's probably a logical explanation of this. There's a reason this all happened. So I've become cynical, I feel like, in the last year because of you, Michael.
Sure. Yeah, and I don't blame you. I mean, of all people, I'm the most cynical of all. And you, lovely Nicole, what do you know about the case of Roanoke?
You know, to be honest, I actually don't know a whole bunch about it. So I'm kind of interested to see where it's going to go.
Yeah, and this is one of my favorite cases. And we've been doing a couple mysteries the last few weeks. Last week, we did the case of the Tylenol murders. What, did you know anything about that one? Lovely Nicole, you weren't here last week.
Yeah.
Obviously here in
Chicago.
Yeah,
what's, I mean, we were suburban boys for like our middle age. Like we obviously grew up in the city, but we moved out pretty early. Mm-hmm. You actually stood in that area, so can you tell me a little bit about how you felt during that time?
You know, I was really young.
The copycat ones, not necessarily the ones from the early 80s, the copycats.
So, I was still pretty young at that time, but I do remember people talking about it a lot. I vaguely remember, like, because my parents are law, my dad's law enforcement and my mom's a nurse, so I do remember people, like, speaking on it, but I actually just, I've listened to a ton of podcasts on it because I've always been really interested in it. Just because it's such a bizarre thing, and like most of my memories are of having to break the seal, so it's like clearly that wasn't the case back then, and that's why I don't remember a ton of it. But it was definitely something people were talking about. It was all over the news, like media went crazy with it because it was a terrifying thing to be like unaware of what was going to happen if you just have a headache, you know?
Our new thing needs to be Nikki, after an episode, asking the commissioner, her father, he helps Batman, of what he remembers from certain cases, especially the Chicago ones. Mm-hmm. I'd be so fascinated to see from his point of view what he was thinking during that time.
That'd be really interesting. Maybe, why not? Especially about the Tylenol murders.
Yeah, I mean, I know when we did...
give me his number. I'll text him. I'll call him. Let me get his number.
What's it, homie, the clown?
She refuses to give me the number.
No, yeah. I talked to him about the Diamond and Tiana Bradley case.
Oh, yes, on the Gone Missing podcast.
Yeah, we did that here, too. Yeah. We did it here.
That's right, yeah. One of the rare crossover.
Very
ones.
Sad episode.
Yeah,
super sad. But I talked to him a little bit about that to see what he remembered, because he was in that area at that time. So it's always interesting to get his feedback on things when, you know, he was in the thick of it, really.
So with that, let's go ahead and get into today's Thanksgiving episode of Murder, Mysteries, and More. Here in the United States, we are celebrating Turkey Day, hopefully safely.
Real loose word of celebrating there, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. But everybody will still pig out, hopefully, and watch some terrible football. And with that, we are going to jump into the terrible history of the United States as it became a nation, or at least a discovered country at this time.
He's quote-unquoting people.
Yes. I want to give some credit to my sources from the New York Times, Alan Yuhas, and of course, the amazing website and television channel History. I love all the crazy stuff. Even though there's a lot of weird alien stuff, there's still some amazing
stuff.
We'll
find Hitler soon.
Yeah, we'll still,
he's out there.
He is definitely
We're
out
hunting
there.
Him.
So the origins of one of America's oldest unsolved mysteries can be traced to August of 1587. When a group of about 115 English settlers. No, I know. My speech impediment is real. Settlers arrived on Roanoke Island off the coast of what is now North Carolina, who would mysteriously disappear from the face of the earth. The Roanoke Island Colony, the first English settlement in the New World, was founded by English explorer Sir Walter Raleigh in August of 1585. The first Roanoke colonists did not fare well, suffering from dwindling food supplies, Native American attacks, and in 1586, they returned to England aboard a ship captained by Sir Francis Drake. So right away, the experiment didn't work. And that's the one thing that you keep... The exploration and discovery of America from the English settlement just was constant failure that just they kept kind of pushing the goalposts first, right? Like they were saying, like, this is what we're here for. Oh, well, we got to get back to the native land. And then they did another trek. And I thought that was really funny. That was just kind of one mistake somebody built upon another person's mistake. And it just eventually got into, and we'll get into the kind of like how the Roanoke stories goes into the discovery of the United States.
Almost like Captain Drake started from the bottom. Now he's here. That was good. Thank you, Nikki.
In 1587, Raleigh would send out another group of 100 colonists under the leadership of John White. Later that year, it was decided that John White, the governor of the new colony, would sail back to England to gather a fresh load of supplies. But just as he arrived, a major naval war broke out between England and Spain, and Queen Elizabeth called on every available ship to confront the mighty Spanish Armada. And here's the one thing you got to remember. This isn't 2020. This is back in 1587. You had to travel the seas on a boat. This wasn't a two-hour trip.
It wasn't even like the Dunkirk situation where it was, you know, the 50s or the 40s, and it was a little more doable. I mean, even then, it was still a long time. I can only imagine, like, hearing you say them having to travel for supplies, like, that's a whole, like, you missed your entire childhood right there, traveling for supplies.
And that, and here's how it all comes together. In 1587 is when they arrived, that second group of colonists, and later that year, John White's heading back into England. In August of 1590, White finally returned to Roanoke, where he had left his wife and daughter, his infant's granddaughter, Virginia Dare, the first English child born in the Americas.
Mazel.
And the other settlers 3 years long before then. So 3 years passed, this guy is gone. Can you imagine being his wife or his child being like, you don't even know, how do you know he got there safely to begin with?
You don't.
You don't get a text message, you don't get a phone call. Like, they might as well be going to Mars in 1587.
I can't even imagine what that would be like in that moment of like, all right, well, guess I'll see you in a few years.
Yeah, and enjoy life. Good luck. He found no trace of the colony or its inhabitants and few clues to what might have happened apart from a single word, Croatoan, carved into a wooden post.
Maybe he just didn't find the exact same spot.
Investigations into the fate of the, quote, lost colony of Roanoke have continued over the centuries, but no one has come up with a satisfactory answer. Croatoan was the name of an island south of Roanoke that was home to a Native American tribe of the same name. Perhaps then, the colonists were killed or abducted by Native Americans. Other hypotheses hold that they tried to sail back to England on their own and got lost at sea. That they met a bloody end at the hands of Spaniards who had marched up from Florida, or that they moved further inland and were absorbed into a friendly tribe. In 1998, archaeologists studying tree ring data from Virginia found that extreme drought conditions persisted between 1587 and 1589. Now again, 1587 to 2020, a little different when it comes to how you're going to get your water, where you get your water, and how dependent you are into Mother Nature. These conditions undoubtedly contributed to the demise of the so-called lost colony. But where the settlers went after they left Roanoke remains a mystery. Once again, the theory has them being absorbed into a Native American tribe known as the Croatans. In 2007, efforts began to collect and analyze DNA from local families to figure out if they're related to the Roanoke settlers, local Native American tribes, or both. So interesting how they brought science into this. They're like, let's see if we can, because you always hear this about Jesus Christ. Like, if we could just find the DNA linked to Jesus Christ and find the bloodline. This one, they're like, well, no, this is within the century line where we could find a bloodline still in this country.
I mean, you can find your great-great-great-great-grandfather through a little swab that they send you through the mail now.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That's so true. Yeah, nowadays it's just with the Ancestry.com, who are not a sponsor, but we'll take your sponsorship.
It should be. We're mutts. We'd love to know what exactly we are.
I want to know the sins of my great-great-grandfather. Despite the lingering mystery, it seems there is one thing to be thankful for. The lessons learned at Roanoke may have helped the next group of English settlers who would found their own colony 17 years later, just a short distance to the north, Jamestown.
Man, that's like being the original 300 Spartan and being like, well, it led to freedom, but we did have to kill 300 people. It's like, well, can we avoid it, like sending the 300 alone? They asked for the army.
And also, I don't want to thank the English for discovering a country that they like.
And they figured
and they
it out.
Literally colonized. Yeah.
I'm glad you destroyed an entire people and then figured it out. I don't think we're going to really give you much pity on that.
So a new book about the colonists, The Lost Colony and Hatteras Island, published in June of 2020 and citing 10 years of excavations at nearby Hatteras Island, aims to put the mystery to bed.
Aliens.
The book's author, Scott Dawson, a researcher from Hatteras, argues that Native people who lived there took in English settlers and that historical records and artifacts can end the debate. Quote, basically, the historical evidence says that's where they went, said Mark Horton, an archaeologist at the University of Bristol in England, who worked with Mr. Dawson. Dr. Horton acknowledged that there was no, quote, smoking gun, but said that with everything in context, it's, quote, not rocket science. Historians and archaeologists not involved in recent research on Hatteras were more skeptical, saying that the evidence was inconclusive and they wanted to see peer-reviewed work. You know, because science is important.
Yeah.
And research is important. Who would have thunk it, huh?
Checking your facts is very important.
Yeah, kind of crazy. They also said the argument was not new. The idea that the Croatoans, as the native people on Hatteras were called, adopted at least some of the settlers, has long been considered plausible. Quote, sure, it's possible. Why wouldn't it be? Said Melinda Maynor Lowry, a professor of history at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, go Tar Heels. Quote, people don't get lost. They get murdered. They get stolen. They get taken in. They live and die as members of other communities, unquote. And I always say this. This is something I've been saying since the beginning of Murder Mysteries and More. There are so many dead bodies around this country that nobody knows about. So many stories because it's such a big land. And that's what it is. Somebody goes somewhere because there's so many different ways that you can disappear in this great land, especially back in these, you know, days when they were colonizing the country.
What's fascinating you talk about that, because the PBS doc that I watch discussed that an earlier time, they assumed that they were killed by the natives. They assumed this was a violent group and they were murdered by them.
Yeah.
When we find out later, we're like, well, no, it's more realistic. They were taken in by them and it was a peaceful tribe that you were next to. And they actually took in these people and they started their own little settlement.
And we'll get into a little bit about that too, how it's just very complex when you're dealing with people. There's all types of people, especially when there's language, and culture barrier. And a culture barrier. So Dr. Maynor Lowry presented a similar possibility in her 2018 book on the history of the Lumbee people, the descendants of dozens of tribes in wide region, including eastern North Carolina. Despite violence by English against Croatoan villagers, she wrote, the settlers probably took refuge with them. Quote, they're all interfighting, and these different groups are trying to use English against one another, quote unquote. She said, the Croatoans perhaps saw the English as a powerful ally and sources of valuable new things. Dr. Maynor Lowry, who is Lumbee, added that the Lost Colony story is self-based on the incorrect premise that Native people also disappeared, which we didn't, unquote. The story, she said, was like a, quote, monument that has to come down, adding that, quote, it's harder to dismantle an origin story than a statue. And I love that because there is something about perception and reality. This story has become reality. But the truth of the matter is, there's still Native tribes that lived here during this time. They didn't disappear. They either got killed out or they faded into history but they didn't disappear. Mm-hmm. And I like that she is saying that we have to get this notion out of it. And it's a reason why I wanted to put into the story is the changing of the story and the truth of it.
Well, that's a very American thing, is that the native tribes just, they kind of just left. They were just done when, in actuality, they were slaughtered or moved and eventually died on the move.
Or died through disease brought by the English settlers.
Boom. Fact.
So Mr. Dawson, a founder of the Croatoan Archaeological Society, a local research group, said he hoped his book would dismantle some of that story. Quote, I was trying to get the Croatoan's history back from the depths of mythology, he said. Quote, they played a huge role in American history, took these people in, and in school, you're taught that no one knows what Croatoan means. So they have such an impact in probably saving these colonies, and they don't get any credit in the history books because they just disappeared. It's a mystery. Right. What happened? It's like, we know what happened, or at least we have an idea what happened.
The mystery is a better story.
He also wanted to counter the mystique around the settlers, which has also ballooned over the centuries in pop culture. They were made the heroes of 19th century romances. Confederate sympathizers tied them in with themes of, quote, the lost cause. And a nationalistic outdoor musical has drawn more than 4 million people, including President Franklin D. Roosevelt, since 1937. Again, it's just Americanizing it and, you know, Disneyfying your history.
We're the country that still celebrates Columbus Day. Like, it's like, yeah. Like, and the facts are all out there. We all know he was a terrible monster, but yet the story is so good. They don't want to get rid of that story. They don't want to stop telling that story. They don't want to give up that day. And I understand it's a big Italian thing, but I'm Spanish. I get it. Half of my people killed my other people.
So before those works, though, the colonists had been historical footnotes, said Charles Ewan, an archaeologist at East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina. It is not clear how much their contemporaries even wondered what happened to them, he said, given how common failure, death, and disappearances were in European ventures across the Atlantic. Quote, it's no big mystery until you start to get a historical type of writing in the 1800s, he said. Quote, then it's big. It gets to be our big mystery, and it fits into racist ideas. Dr. Ewan, who also was working on a book about the colony, said that there was so many stories about it, in parts because there was so little evidence about what actually happened to the colonists. The settlers could have been killed by hostile native people or by England's rival, the Spanish, or face famine, a hurricane, shipwreck. Again, this is North Carolina.
Right.
Any point. This is only 100 people. So it's not like you're talking about them taking out Raleigh, North Carolina. It's just like taking out a little town, a little farm town. Mm-hmm. We saw it in Joplin, Missouri just a few years ago.
Yep. Another good fact.
They could have moved into the mainland, allying with native groups there, or moved in with the Croatoan people on Hatteras. Quote, I'm not saying it's not true, Dr. Ewan said of the last theory. Quote, I'm just saying I'm very skeptical. Experts disagreed about how reliable sources were from that era and the next, including one Englishman's account published in 1709 about native people on Hatteras whose ancestors could read. Native American people reading, though, in 1709? I don't think that's actually
happening. Well, reading American text, or reading English text. Yeah, so that doesn't exist. That's a thing.
Yeah, like, that's not real.
They read their own stuff, but English text.
Exactly. They are also skeptical that artifacts found in Hatteras, including a rapier hilt, late 16th century gun hardware, and part of a slate writing tablet could definitively be traced to the colonists. Dr. Horton did say he was preparing a study for peer review on the Hatteras research, though. So maybe one day we'll do an update on this story if we actually find out what happened to the people of Roanoke. Quote, it's very easy to find European things intermingled with Native American things, said Dennis Blanton, an archaeologist at James Madison University in Harrisburg, Virginia. Quote, there were Europeans in and out of the Mid-Atlantic and the Southeast for a long time. And a lot of those landfills were brief, unrecorded, or poorly recorded, which is what we always talk about history. Who was keeping records at these times? Nobody was. Nobody thought of keeping a record.
I mean, we'll talk smack about the way they were keeping, let's say, DNA evidence back in the 70s and 80s. We're talking about hundreds of years ago. They can't even comprehend how big the world truly is or what the future even looks like or if there is a future. These lifelong spans were what? Maybe you'll live to be 40, if that's an old man at that point.
Sure. He said that it was very hard to know how objects wound up on Hatteras, given how much trade, conflict, and contact was going on. Quote, the scenarios are so varied, It just makes your head spin, he said. Dr. Blandon adding that feeding and sheltering about 100 colonists would have been, quote, a fairly significant strain on the Croatoan community. Quote, if experience is any guide, the adoption of Europeans into an indigenous community would have been quite limited, he said. James Horn, a historian and member of the First Colony Foundation, a research nonprofit, said that most historians over the past 50 years had considered Hatteras a destination for the settlers. But he said it was unlikely that all of the colonists ended up there. Mr. Horn and an archaeologist with the First Colony Foundation, Nicholas M. Lachetti, believe they have evidence that some of the settlers moved about 50 miles inland to a place they call Site X. Dr. Lachetti said the colonists would have split up with some of the Hatterists, others at Site X, and in other groups somewhere else. Although there have been no excavations at Site X since 2018, Dr. Horn said he expected the search for evidence to continue. Quote, it's a 400-year-old mystery that resolves around all sorts of mysteries within it. It's too tempting for many people. Mr. Dawson continues to lead a small team on Hatteras, which is now dotted with luxury homes and vacation rentals. Quote, I just wanted to salvage something before it's under somebody's 10-bedroom house with a pool. Quote, at least we can salvage something to argue about. So we got to this point where, yeah, I mean, America has a lot of history.
Got a skeleton.
A lot of skeletons. Mm-hmm. So with all that, what do you guys think happens? We'll start with you, good brother. Knowing the story, you've known the story before it, listening to what we brought to this table, what do you think? How did this end for them?
I truly believe that they moved. I think some got taken in by the natives because there's a lot of evidence of that. I also think that you just moved because, again, we don't understand it because we haven't had to live like it because I can get water from the bathroom sink anytime I want. But that was a big determination of where are we going to live? We have no fresh source of water, so we have to move. You don't know if your husband's coming back. You don't know if these men that just left on a ship are leaving, and they leave enough men in charge to make those kind of moves. I like to – the whole episode, I'm kind of comparing it to, let's say, a 9/11. Where it's easy to have these conspiracy theories to think, well, it was all planned out and it was all this. Because it's a much scarier thought that, no, we were attacked by an upset group of individuals. And they easily attacked us and did a lot of damage to us. I think that's scarier. I think in this case, it's easier to say they vanished than to be like, well, no, man. Like, you left for a few years. They had to move on and find some way to survive. And, you know, a bunch of them probably didn't survive either. Again, back to your thing of, how many unmarked graves do we have just in the United States alone and all this unknown territory that is no man's land in Nevada, let's say? How many bodies are really there? So it's easy to fall into the story of they went missing as a big group instead of saying, no, people, they're probably a little A, a little bit of B, a little bit of C, and sadly, that's where you are.
Love it, Nicole.
Yeah, I think the idea that things kind of split up and maybe people splintered off is a good, like, it sounds the most likely to me. And I think it can be a couple of things. Like, we're literally living in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. So it's like disease could have happened and taken out many of them. And then people decided they needed to move or they weren't going to be able to survive in where they were at. So some of them splintered off to go into those different communities. Some of them splintered off to try and find another place that was safer, maybe further inland. Like, I think that there are so many possibilities because 100 people isn't that many people, mm-hmm. which is just for that much land. It's not that many people.
That much dense land. Yeah, it wasn't land that we think of. Like, even like the Great Plains of Illinois weren't the Great Plains the way we think of them back in those days. So like it was just all rural
vegetation.
Yeah. And like, think about it. It's North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So it's sticky. It's hot. It's swampy a little bit. Like it's not pleasant for these people. So I wonder like how much of it was, you know, the life around it when it came to animal life. How many, I don't know, the alligators were back around when in that area at that point, at that time of American history. But can you imagine how many people got swooped up by
like
predators?
Which predators were in that area? Yeah. Like, we're not experts on the area, but there are some sort of predator, especially back then when this is their territory.
So if we're getting swooped up by cougars right now in California and Hollywood, these dudes were definitely getting got by these animals in the middle of settling, or their version of settling the country. But that is it. That is our episode about Roanoke, Croatoan. That, I guess, you know, I don't think the story would really resonate with people if it wasn't for that imagery of just something being written onto a piece of tree.
Oh, yeah, very Slenderman fun where it's like, uh-oh, what is this?
But that's it. Like, literally this whole story goes down to this. Because if I just told you, hey, in the early days when settlers were coming to this country, a group of 100, somebody went away for 3 years, came back, and they were gone. You'd be like, yeah, they probably moved this. They got into fights. Like, it's a thousand different. You never would have thought, well, they just vanished. Like, something mysterious. But it's the minute you put that Hollywoodized thing of like, there's a secret message. What does it mean? Was it these people that they get killed? Like, they could just look 5 minutes to the left and you'll find them. Like, it's just, it's like finding your, missing your car in the wrong thing. It's, you parked in H, but it's actually in G.
It's also interesting that we bring this up, and it goes into different cases of, you know, these experts, you can know almost 99% of something. But there still is a mode of, you're lost in translation. You still, look at, well, let's say the Egyptians, when they just open up a brand new casket. You can be like, I'm 90, I've studied this, I've gone through it, I'm 90% sure this is what it says. But at the end of the day, you truly don't, because we don't have enough information from back then. There wasn't a system to it.
Right.
So there is a lot of this language from the natives that are lost to the colonies. And it's kind of sad to think about that we lost almost an entire language. We lost a history, or a really pronounced history. Not just, we mostly get what happened, but we'll never know 100% how these people lived.
That is it, though, friends. That is our Thanksgiving episode of Murder Mysteries and More. Hopefully, you guys are all being safe and sound, and hopefully you're celebrating safely and soundly in 2020. We want to thank you so much for making us a part of your holiday season. You can follow us all over the universe. We're on social media. The Lovely Nicole Mancha is on Twitter at Typing When Tipsy, Instagram Typing When Tipsy, and of course check out the Gone Missing podcast. They've done some amazing work, her and her amazing co-host Alyssa. Check them out at the Gone Missing podcast on Instagram at
The Gone Missing Pod.
And on Twitter at Gone Missing Pod. And check him out wherever you get your favorite podcast at Gone Missing Podcast. The Good Brother is on Twitter at Mercado21Alex and on Instagram at Mercado2121. You can also check out his pop culture show. They're on Twitter at Good Brothers Pod. The Good Brother has a bunch of awesome stuff coming down because the holiday season means Disney is giving us a bunch of things to talk about, so make sure you're following him. And he is posting a bunch of sexy nipple pictures on Instagram.
They're the best.
So make sure you guys are following him there. I talk about sports and a bunch of different stuff, but, you know, for some reason people think I know about sports. I really don't. Just check my fantasy team.
He really doesn't. He knows more about politics.
I'm on Instagram, Mike Mercado Media. Twitter, Mike M Media. Sports show is on Twitter at Couch Sports Talk. Like, rate, review, and share us wherever you get your favorite podcast at Mercado Airwaves. We have swag, teespring.com/Mercado Airwaves.
Go ahead and buy a When in Doubt, Merc It Out shirt, baby.
teespring.com/Mercado Airwaves. They could become a producer of the show, Good Brother. Did you know that?
Yeah, I'm not even a producer of the show.
Yeah.
You demoted me and Nikki a while ago. Absolutely. To just guest host.
Absolutely. And that could be at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. You get us better microphones that aren't popping every single chance that we touch them at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. We even had, Alex, we are so good that we were given interviews with athletes, celebrities, award winners, and you could get all of them.
I'm not any of those, but thank you, Mike. I am a couple, a little bit of all
the people. The people, Good Brother, can get them on Patreon ad-free and before anybody else. That's patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. For the lovely Nicole Mancha.
Goodbye, everybody.
For the Good Brother himself, Alex Mercado.
Gobble, gobble.
I'm Mike Mercado. We'll see you next time here on Murder
Mysteries
and Moss
on the Mercado Airwaves Network.